News Talk on demand. Interruption-free audio. Where you want it, when you want it.
Happy Sunday, everybody. Hope you're having a great weekend so far. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. If you have a question about anything garden, yard, houseplant related, you can feel free to give us a call. The number is 1-877-332-8255. Hey, Rick, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Brittany. I'm doing great. It's a little bit cooler today, so it's a little bit of reprieve from all the hot weather we've been having. So great time to be out in the garden.
Yeah, definitely. And we're already getting a lot of texts in, and a lot of them, conveniently enough, are about things that we wanted to talk about anyways. So here is one. This is Sarah from Colonze. I have a 10-foot tall apple tree, and it has a very large side branch that has very tiny apples on it. I want to prune this branch out. When's the best time to do this?
Yeah, any time now is good to do it. You can prune, since the leaves are the full size right now, you can prune them now, and you can prune them right up until even the dormant period, which is, until basically in the middle to end of November. And then I stop, and then I'll prune again on the apple trees again in March or the first week of April. So yeah, you can do some pruning right now because all the saps are basically, they're not concentrating up anymore. They're starting to send sugars down to the root system now. And so, it's not a problem to prune.
Okay, perfect. And does that really go for any type of tree? Are you good to prune any tree at all right now?
Pretty much any type of tree you can prune, especially if you're doing birches and maples and even pine trees. Now is a critical time to prune. You don't want to prune other times of the year. You want to prune, after the leaves are fully grown and fully opened up, and then right up until about the middle to the end of September. And then I don't like to prune them anymore because they bleed like crazy in the spring if you prune them in the dormant period. So so now is a perfect time for birches, maples, and pine trees. Now is the time you want to give them a pruning for sure. And even the spruces and those kind of things, you can prune them as well. A lot of people decide they want to take the boughs up off the you know, take the branches up off the ground. Now's a good time to do that pruning because a lot of evergreens go dormant by August the 1st, approximately, depending on the year. And especially this year, a lot of them have set their buds already because it's been so dry.
Yeah.
And so now's a great time to do that kind of a pruning. And even your shrubs, you can do some light pruning. Like if you didn't prune your spireas and those because they're all finished blooming now, just deadhead them. Just give them a light pruning to deadhead them. They'll look a lot nicer for the rest of the summer, and so you can do that right now as well.
Perfect. And when it comes to planting trees and shrubs, are you still okay to plant at this time of year?
That's a great question. I get that question probably a zillion times every week.
Yeah.
And because everybody's thinking, okay, you can only plant in the spring, right? That's old. The old tradition was when, you know, when the farmers put the crop in the ground, that's when you can plant, right? So, yeah. But yeah, with containers, all the nursery products in containers now, you can plant all summer long, right up from when the frost is out of the ground until the frost goes in the ground in the fall. You can actually plant. You just have to make sure that you don't plant and go on holidays for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, unless you got, that's the biggest thing. But other than that, you just have to make sure you're around to water them, and you can plant all summer. There's still lots and lots of time for those plants to get rooted, before wintertime. And so you're good to go.
Perfect. And when it comes to plants rooting, I had to run into Dutch Growers on Friday to pick up a few things. My next door neighbor heard that I was going, so she said, hey, I'm going to be planting some shrubs. Can you pick me up some mics? And I had no clue what she was talking about, so they had to help me find them once I got there. But what exactly are mics? What do they do? What's the point of using them?
Yeah, for the residentials, it comes in a blue container. Okay. It's called mic. And what it is a mycorrhizome. And, the farming community will know what that is because they use a lot of mycorrhizomes when they're planting canola and that. What it is mycorrhizome is actually a bacteria. And, a lot of the research actually came from the University of Saskatchewan.
Oh, really?
And a company, in Saskatchewan that started all that. But it's actually a natural bacteria that's in the soil that basically what it does is it cultures itself on the root system of the plant. And then it grows little, these little nodules. They look like little warts on the roots. And those little warts, what they do is they're most of them are phosphorus fixing. There are some nitrogen fixing mycorrhizomes too, but the ones Mike is, it's actually a phosphorus fixing. So it grabs phosphorus from the soil and feeds it more to, makes it more available. Because there's a lot of phosphorus that's just not available to the plant. And so it grabs the phosphorus and gives it to the plant. And also because of those nodules, it actually grabs moisture too. So it's a great way to make the roots just go like crazy to get them established better. And at our garden center, because we sell the mics, you buy it with the plant at the time you actually purchase the plant. Then normally we give you a 1-year warranty on all your plants, but if you use the mics, you actually get a 5-year warranty. That's how good it works.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. So I guess next time I have a shrub or a tree to plant, I'm definitely going to be getting some of those. All right.
Yeah. Is that the one thing I have to remember about mycorrhizum when you're handling it? It only lasts for you know, you can't hold it on for season to season.
Yeah.
So you basically buy what you need to do that planting and make sure when you buy it, you'll see it in the stores. It'll always be inside where it's probably air conditioned and that. And so you can't just let it sit it out in the sun. It's a living organism. So you got to treat it and you can't put it in the shed and let it freeze over wintertime. So, you have to treat it like a living organism because that's what it is, but it works really well.
Perfect. Okay. We're talking trees and perfectly. Jean has a question about trees out in Regina. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I have a 25 year old, about a maybe 40 foot sugar maple. And I noticed that it's dropping a lot of leaves. And also some of the lower skinny branches, the leaves are turning yellow already and dropping off. Is that heat stress or lack of water or?
Yeah, it's probably heat stress. So what you need at the drip line of the tree, I would probe the soil down at least 12 to 16 inches down. You know, use a piece of rebar or something like that. And just see what the moisture is because sometimes it's also too much water. Okay. So check what it is. Also check for aphids. Aphids have been just brutal. They've been just brutal this year with the heat and everything else.
And leafhoppers.
Yeah. So check for those. But most likely the issue is either too much or not enough water. And the only way you can tell that is by probing the soil about at least 12 to 16 inches down. Okay. At the drip line of the tree, which is the outer edge of the branches. Right.
Right. Yeah. All right. I will do that. One thing, Rick, I would like maybe you could address all of us avid gardeners out here and those that maybe are just learning about the necessity of bees, ladybugs, and earthworms. Because I have not seen any bees around my yard. Ladybugs, none, and no earthworms in my garden. So I'll hang up now and let you address that. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks, Jean. Let's get into that in the next segment here, Rick. We'll do a whole talk about bugs coming up here. If you do have a question, we'll still get you on, though. You can give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. We're going to be talking bugs coming up here quickly, but first we're going to take a couple of calls. We've got Jill on the line in Saskatoon. Hi, Jill.
Hi there.
Thanks your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, of course.
You're welcome.
My question is that out where I live, just south of the city here near the river, the soil is very, very sandy and light. And I'm wondering what I should be adding to the garden, because it seems like everything just wants to sink roots forever and not grow above.
Yeah, so compost is number one, big one. So make sure you put some compost in there because that actually helps maintain moisture into your soil. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the easiest one you could put. And I'm not talking about peat moss is works kind of good, but the problem is peat moss I find is too fine. So using a good compost, you know, whether manure or a good garden compost that you've made yourself, or you can pick up a lot of times at the you live outside the city, but you know some of your local landfills have compost piles that you can actually, you know, pick up compost from. Where you dump off all your greens and everything else. But compost for your sandy soil is probably the number one that you can put into your soil. So getting a good manure, that kind of stuff. Perfect. Just remember, you don't want to go too much of one thing. And so that's why I like a garden compost, because you're going to have things like, you might have a little bit of manure in it, but you also might have some, you know, branches, sticks, and that kind of stuff. You might have some sawdust. You might have some grass clippings. It's a mixture of everything. And that mixture of everything, which helps keep maintain the moisture and give the nutrients for the plants that the plants all need.
Okay. Thanks very much. That's very helpful, because we tried the peat moss, and, yeah, just wasn't.
Yeah, peat moss is just too fine. I find it's okay, but it doesn't, for what you need, it just doesn't do the trick. You need to go to a compost.
Okay, the last garden that I had was Regina, and as you can imagine, the soil is quite a bit different.
Yeah, well, then you're going to add, when you have those kind of hard soils, then you're adding things like even bark mulch or gypsum, you know, to help break up the clay particles. But you're totally different where you are.
We sure are. Thank you very much.
Of course. Okay. Thanks so much, Jill. All right, now we have Yusuf on the line in Saskatoon. Hi, Yusuf.
Hi, good morning. I have some cucumber plants here. The last few days, the leaves are turning kind of whitish. So I don't know. What to do with it?
With the heat and humidity, what you have is powdery mildew. Okay, and so one thing that's number one is that you have to water early in the morning, but after the sun is up. Okay,
I have those drips.
Yep, perfect.
So I have this whitish on my plants.
Yep, so there's two things you can try. One is called garden sulfur, and you can spray it onto the leaves, and it'll help clean it up and prevent it from spreading. And the other one you can try is just a natural one. You can do a mixture of water and milk. The protein in the milk will actually help break up and dissipate the powdery mildew as well. So you can use either one of them. And I just use a garden sulfur. And garden sulfur, it's a powder you mix with water and you spray onto the leaves. It cleans it up pretty quickly.
Garden sulfur, you said?
Yep, correct.
And it's available in the...
You can get garden sulfur. It comes in a little container, and you mix with water. You can get it at pretty much any garden center, any center that handles garden products. It's a pretty universal product that's used a lot, so you can pretty much get it at any garden center.
So it's not too late now to do it.
No, because right now you still got a whole month of cucumbers, producing cucumbers yet and finishing off. So you definitely need to take care of it. And then next year, if you have that same problem, get on it right away as soon as you see it. Okay.
Okay. So you said sulfur from with water, mix it and spray it.
And spray it on. Just go by the instructions on the container.
Thank you so much.
Perfect. Thanks so much for the call, Yusuf. All right. We're going to get to bugs. I promise, Gene, but we've got a few more callers on the line. We have Faye in Saskatoon right now. Hi, Faye.
Hi.
What's your question?
I have two questions, if I can. The first one is about ants. Our yard is just teeming with ants this year, and they're really bad in our hostas. We don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, or how we should get rid of them, or if we should.
Well, ants, number one, is the reason why ants are a lot of times around, because in dry years, ants produce like crazy, okay? So making sure that you've got enough moisture, because ants don't like moist soil. They like dry soil. And so make sure you got adequate moisture, especially even in the north side of the house is where your hostas are. It tends to be drier right now just because of there's just no moisture at all. And so watch the moisture. And also one thing about ants is they like to be around plants that have aphids. So watch for aphids, because if you got a lot of aphids in your plants, the ants will go and actually harvest the excrement, the sap that the aphids excrete. They don't eat the aphids. They actually farm the aphids. They milk them like dairy cattle. They cling onto the back of them, and as the aphids excrete, they grab the sap, and then they bring it down to the nest. So they're very smart that they don't actually eat that insect. They actually use them for beneficial purposes. So the other one you can use in your garden is, and works very well, is called ant-out nematodes. So you have to wet the soil first, because nematodes is an insect that you spray onto your grass or your garden or your shrub bed. And but the nematode has to go through moist soil. It can't go through bone dry soil. It won't work. So you have to water your soil well first, and then spray the nematodes on, and then water again, and the nematodes will go down to the ant nest where the queen is, and will start attacking the nest itself. The eggs is what it attacks. It's not the ants themselves.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now, is there a reason why we don't want the ants? Like, do they actually eat the plants?
Well, they can. If you get a big nest at the base of a plant, it'll aerate the plant so much, you know, that it'll actually dry the soil out, and they actually will actually cut the roots as well as they go through. But the biggest issue is that they just aerate the soil so bad that the plant just has no moisture that it can't survive there, because it's just too dry. So just by keeping it wet, if you keep it wet as well, especially a deep wetting, because normally, don't forget, those ant nests are down probably at least 12 inches at least. So you have to do a deep soak, even using a root feeder and wetting the area where the ant nest is. Then the queen won't like that, and the queen will actually just move to a different location. And
okay,
so by
powder called Ampigon?
Yep.
Would that work?
Yep. Absolutely. It'll work on top of the nest. What Ampigon is it's a diatomaceous earth, which is actually crushed up seashells. So when you sprinkle that on top of the anthill, it actually, when the ants crawl through it, it gets into their little joints and basically cuts them up and dehydrates them. So it takes care of the actual adult ants. But you got to remember, the queen's underground producing even more ant eggs and then just replacing those ants. So that's why I like to go after, with the nematodes, to go after the root problem as the nest itself.
Okay, so we're watering about 15 minutes a day, every third day in our flower beds. Is that enough right now?
Well, where the actual ant hills are, you want to water a little bit deeper, okay?
Okay.
So give it a little extra, so it goes down, the water goes down deeper, and then that'll make it so that the queen ant won't want to be there.
So 20 minutes every second day?
Yep. Yeah, or even just taking in those patches where you know where you have that ant nest, just taking just slowly putting the garden hose on that spot and just let it trickle so it goes down deep, okay?
Okay. Then my second question is about Chinese peonies.
Yes.
So this year I decided I would leave the, after they flowered, I would leave it on to see if I could get some seeds.
Yes.
And now the plant has turned kind of an olive green, and all these seed pods are white powdery. There's no powder on the leaves at all, but they're just an olive green instead of the bright green.
Yeah. With this heat, I mean, they're just under a bit of a stress, because peonies like to be dry. You don't want to overwater them, right?
Right.
But right now it's just been super dry because of the heat and humidity. So most likely, if it's just all powder, you probably didn't have great pollination, but so you're probably not going to get any seed out of that this year.
Let the strength go into the plant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And also you just watch the moisture, you know, don't let it go. It doesn't like to be wet at all. Okay. But don't let it go bone dry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Rick.
Perfect. Thanks so much for the call, Faye. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. Good morning. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. If you've got a question, you can feel free to give us a call. The number is 1-877-332-8255. You can also send us a text at that same number. Right now we have Tom on the line out in Choiceland. Hi, Tom.
Hi there.
Good morning.
I was wondering, I know there's a big aphid problem this year. So you get ladybugs, but where do you buy them?
A lot of ladybugs, you can get them at a local garden center, but you got to order them in the spring. The problem has been these last 2 years is there has been not a great ladybug harvest. So the numbers have been low, so we haven't been able to get them. We've had orders, but haven't been able to fill them.
Okay.
So there's also, the ladybug lady out in Vancouver Island. There's another person out there that handles them. I'm not sure if she had them this year at all as well. But the best thing you do for your garden is that make it so that they want to be around. So they loved having mulch. Okay, so you can mulch your shrub beds and that. That's great habitat for them to winter for the wintertime. But also, you'll probably notice that we had the question about how come we don't have, you know, different insects around the yard and all that kind of stuff this year. And a lot of it has to do because of the type of year we're having. We're not even have that many mosquitoes. Why don't we have that many mosquitoes? Because there isn't much moisture around. So those insects, the insects love moisture, okay? They need water as well. So putting out bird baths, putting out little bowls and that kind of stuff around, you need to clean them out just so for you don't make habitat for mosquitoes, larvae. But if you make spots that you can have water for those insects, you'll attract bees more to your yard. You'll attract all kinds of insects to your yard to be able to go after the other insects, which just feed on basically the sap of the tree. So they're getting their moisture from the tree itself. Whereas the predators need water to be able to survive. So then you'll want to make sure that you have some of that around.
All right. And then I got another question for you. Okay. Like I asked you about this, I think before, about the maggots and stuff to get into the onions, right?
Yes. Yep. The only way you're going to stop that is you have to use a crop cover in the spring. So you have to use, it's called a crop cover. It's a white fabric. Okay. And it looks like landscape fabric, but only it's way thinner and it's white. And it lets light sunlight through and it lets water through. And you have to put that over top as soon as you plant your garden, and you put little props up to hold it up off the ground. Because what you want to do is that as soon as your onions are out of the ground, your fly that lays the eggs for the onion maggots has come out of the ground and they're hanging around your yard on something yellow. They're hanging around weeds like dandelions and that kind of stuff. So you have to get that first 2 to 3 weeks when the first onions to poop up on the ground to make so that fly cannot get to the plant. And then they'll go off to somewhere else and go try to lay their eggs. And then you can take the cover off because the flies have now moved on. And that's the number one way. That's very easy. It's organic, no insecticides, no nothing. And a good, great way of keeping those onion maggots off your onion crop.
Because I thought you mentioned one time about using that grub be gone or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, well, the problem with that is that the grub be gone with those ones, you have to put it on early when the fly is still in its pupate stage. So either put it on in the fall or put it on early in the spring before the fly comes out of the ground as an adult, okay? Because once it's a maggot, then what happens is a lot of times that nematode can't get at them because they're actually already into the onion. So it can, if as long as the nematode can get at them, then it's okay. But it's for that onion maggot, it is a tougher one to get. And the best, like I said, the nematodes can work if they're put on the proper time. But the biggest one is that if you put the crop cover on, then you won't have that issue at all.
So would you do that when you're planting them then, or what?
As soon as you plant your onion sets, like your bulbs or your seed or whatever you're doing, as soon as you put that seed in the ground, cover them up.
No, but that nematode, would you put that on when you're planting them then, or what?
Yep. You'd put it on right the same time you plant. Absolutely.
Perfect. Thanks so much for the call, Tom. Okay, Rick. So Tom asked where to buy ladybugs, but I'm curious, what benefit do ladybugs have in a yard? What good are they doing that we really want them around?
It's amazing because the pupate stage, which is the before it turns into a ladybug, looks like a dragon almost. They eat an amazing amount of ladybug, of aphids and other types of insects. And so do the adult ladybugs as well. They eat a lot of insects. They just eat all day long. That's all they do is eat, 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 eat. So, That works really well. Another bug you can do, you can try to order, and it's becoming more and more popular, is the praying mantis.
Ooh.
And so you can, and that's, of course, kids love the praying mantis because it's so interesting. They won't survive our winters here, so you have to keep introducing them each year. And so, but they eat a lot of bugs as well as a praying mantis. And another insect that I checked into that you can look into, and you just have to make your, you basically, when you plant your garden, plant flowers in around your garden because you attract other predator insects, but you also attract the honeybees and that kind of stuff. So putting sunflower in, putting alyssum in, putting in, you know, lobelia, all kinds of marigolds is another good one to put in to attract the insects. But another insect that's a good predator is what I was just looking up, researching this year, is this spring, is one that's called robber fly. Now, the robber fly looks like a house fly, and it actually is another name for it, I guess, is called the assassin fly.
Oh my God.
And so this assassin fly, it basically goes and just seeks and destroys and goes after even grasshoppers, goes after leafhoppers, aphids, even goes after wasps as well. And so, but they all, there's one negative part about them is that they can bite people too. So, I've noticed some, you know, those, I never realized what they are, but there has been a house fly when I've been out in the water that isn't biting me. And it's not a horse fly. It's not a deer fly. It is actually looks like a house fly. And it actually, that's what it actually is. I found out it's actually a robber fly. And so they do can bite, but they can bite you too, but, normally they just go out mostly after insects. I think the only reason out in the water they get me because there's no other insects around out in the middle of the water. So they're just landing on me and then giving me a little bite. So, but otherwise, yeah, the robber fly, if you want to look into that and how do you attract those, that's a good predator insect too. That's especially when it's dry years, they just love it.
Awesome. So those bugs are more to eat other insects. When it comes to bees, we really just want bees around for pollination purposes, right?
Yeah. And so pollination purposes is huge. So having, you know, you can introduce in the spring as well as leaf cutter bees into your yard if you're having problems with pollination, and you can purchase leaf cutter bees. They're most of the ones you purchase here are actually from Saskatchewan. That's what we like to do. We don't want to introduce bees from other provinces because then it can affect our honeybees. So just make sure you get a leaf cutter bee that comes from Saskatchewan, and it's great. It'll help pollinate, your yard, and also make sure the bees also need water. So making sure you have a water source around for your bees. It's huge, because they'll congregate around the bird bath all the time. You'll see it. And also making sure you have enough flowers just even around your garden. Like I said, plant marigolds, plant, all those kind of plants around your garden, flowers around your garden to attract more bees to the garden. So they actually will go after your other flowers for your tomatoes and your cucumbers and your peppers and your beans and everything else. So that's very, very important, to attract, to put more flowers in your yard. Even if you have to put a container in, if you don't have the space and you want to put a container at the edge, put some containers with some flowers in them, and, you'll attract more bees.
Perfect. And now also quickly on the topic of bees, yesterday I was out in the yard and I got stung by a wasp, and my auntie told me that they've been having a ton of issues with wasps in their yards as well. Is there anything that I can really do to prevent wasps in the yard, or am I better just setting a trap and trying to catch them? What do you recommend?
Yeah, wasps, they're so aggressive.
Yeah.
I was at my sister's cabin and we had tons of wasps, but we also had this black hornet wasps as well. And the black hornet ones are even more aggressive than the yellow jackets. And so you don't want to make one of those mad because they'll just look at you and they'll just keep stinging you over and over again. So one thing about honeybees is that's why, and even leaf cutter bees, is that they don't like to sting you. They're fairly, they, because they sting you, they'll die. So they just want to find honey. That's all, find pollen so they can make honey. And so, but the other wasps and that, yeah, they can be very aggressive and they can sting more than once. So yeah, putting out in the spring, putting out what's called a waspinator. It's basically a fake wasp nest, but you have to put it out early in the spring because they're very territorial. So if there's another wasp nest around, they won't want to be in the same spot. So you can do that. But other than that, once you have them, one thing about wasps is that they sometimes they'll build a nest in a plant or a trellis around a vine, which my sister had right in her trellis. And so she found it by accident, and that's why she got stung. So, and other than that, sometimes they go underground as well. Or in my mother-in-law's case, it actually went into a hole underneath the footing of the house, the insulation in the garage, and they had a nest right in. You couldn't even get at them, and so it was really a problem. So we had to put traps out and seal holes and that kind of stuff. And it can be a problem. And there's lots of sprays out there that you can use to get them if they're that type of situation. But the traps, those little jars with putting little pop in them and those kind of stuff, they work really well to attract them because they love sweet things. Just watch when you're eating outside, just making sure that you got little covers over to your food, and don't put your food out until you're ready to sit down and actually eat outside. And, then you can not attract them to your picnic area as well.
Yep. Perfect. All right. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke. If you have a question, you can feel free to give us a call. The number is 1-877-332-8255. Right now we have Sharon on the line in Saskatoon. Hi, Sharon.
Hello. I have a question about putting iron into the soil. I have sea holly in my garden, as well as something called, I think it's Lorraine Sunshine or a false sunflower. And someone was telling me that the leaves are looking kind of peaked, and she thought I needed more iron. So is that a possibility? Or?
Yeah, you'll see it. You'll look at sort of yellowy between the veins, especially.
Yeah.
And when the veins will be green, the rest will be more yellow, and that's basically called chlorotic, which means lacking iron. Uh-huh. Now, you can feed them iron, okay? But what I suggest you do is that feeding them iron is basically just putting a Band-Aid on it, okay? It does help the plant a lot. But what you need to get down is, why is there an iron deficiency in the soil? And okay, a lot of that has to do because your pH of your soil is too high, okay? In Saskatchewan anyway. Some places it's too low, okay? But your pH should be around, 7. And a lot of soils, especially if you're around Saskatoon, your pH is going to be around 7.4 to up to 8.3. Okay. If it's that high, your plant can't uptake nutrients properly. Okay.
Okay.
And so then what you just need to do is get yourself a little soil testing kit. You can pick them up at most garden centers. And you also need to get yourself some distilled water. Okay. You can get that from a pharmacy or whatever, because you can't use tap water to do this test. So you can do it at your kitchen sink, but you can't use tap water. Because the tap water is a higher pH as well, so it'll distort your results. So use distilled water, do a test, and if you find your pH, it has a little color index on the back of the card of the test kit, and you can just find out if your pH is too high. If it's a really murky green, you know that you'll know that your pH is way too high. And then you need to use things like aluminum sulfate or sulfur to help lower the pH, which then the plant can take up the nutrients that are available in the soil already, just that they can't get it because the pH is too high or too low.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
I'll give that a try. One thing about putting iron in, like just in the interim, if I was to put a rusty old, metal thing in a bucket of water and get the water kind of rusty and then water it with that, would that sort of give it a boost to begin with?
It'll help. Yeah, it'll help. It'll help a bit, but you won't get the results very quickly.
Okay.
And I think what you want to do is you want to get the results a little bit quicker. So find a product, like there's even some fertilizers that you'll see that has an iron base in it, but a lot of fertilizers don't have that. Okay. So, some of the the supplemental or even organic fertilizers have an iron in it, so look for something like that. Or there is ones that just put iron chelate is one we used to use a lot. It's hard to find iron chelate now, but that used to get results like right away. You used to see the change in days. And okay. But otherwise, you can put iron in any way you can, whether it's even a nail into the ground, right? And then with the moisture, it'll just break down. But some of the supplements will do a quicker job of that. But seriously, I you do need to check your pH of your soil. I think that'll be in the long term will be your fix for your plants.
Good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sharon. Good luck. All right. We are going to take a quick break for the news. And after that, we'll be back to answer more of your questions. If you have a question of any sort relating to gardens, yards, houseplants, anything at all, give us a call, 1-877-332-8255. I'm Brittany Caffey here with Rick Van Dyvendyke, and you're listening to Garden Talk on 650 CKOM and 980 CJME.